welcome back, everybody, to The Right Heart, a podcast that believes that a heart guided by solid spiritual formation is a heart that we can follow. Also, check out my blog, Humble Handmade, at www.humblehandmade.com. After you listen to this episode, head over to therightheartpodcast.com for all the show notes and more resources to help you live and grow your Catholic faith in whatever vocation and season of life you're in. We are talking today to a special friend of mine. I do happen to be related to her, so we share a last name. Her name is Janae Franco, and she is my sister-in-law. Her husband is an anesthesia resident up in Ohio, and Janae is not only a half marathon runner, but she is the proud mother of two gorgeous baby girls. Janae, welcome.
Thanks, Erin. It's great to be here.
So, Janae, we are talking today about your spiritual and your physical journey toward getting into shape, really inside and out, after having two babies. Your struggles with postpartum depression and your weight, and the story of really how God touched your heart to get into shape and reconnect with Him through running. So to start off, Janae, I need to ask you, was motherhood a surprise at all to you after you had your first baby? I remember when we were engaged together, you know, way too long ago, you were so excited about being a mom. So what happened after you had your first beautiful baby girl, Lucy?
That is true. There was a lot of years of buildup to that one. For as long as I can remember, that's all I wanted to do, really, was get married and have babies. So yeah, I guess motherhood definitely was a surprise for me in a lot of ways. We had been living in Ohio for about 6 months only, so we didn't really have any friends, maybe two, I guess, that I can think of.
Oh, wow.
So not a lot of community. We were on our own. And Lucy came out and had to spend a week in the NICU because she aspirated meconium. And then, so that was definitely a surprise.
It's so hard for your first, too, to just, you know, you just expect it to be perfect and idyllic. And then when you have something scary like that, and you're kind of alone up there, it must have been really scary.
Yes, it was really hard. Thankfully, my mom was there, which helped a lot. But soon after, she didn't gain weight well. And so we found out that she had tongue tie and kind of had to deal with some feeding issues for a while. And then during that time, we found out that he had matched in a four-year program in Cleveland. So that was kind of, we had to prepare for a move across town. And then I also had to have surgery to get my gallbladder removed, like when Lucy was like 3 months old. And so we had to somehow find childcare for her because my family wasn't able to come up and nobody was able to come up and help with that. So, yeah, it was a surprise, definitely a lot of challenges, and I just felt really isolated. So it definitely wasn't, you know, the rainbow happy time, I guess, that I had always imagined.
Yeah, I feel like I can only speak for me, of course, but I kind of thought that marriage and motherhood were going to be all like roses on my marriage bed and white picket fences and just all these wonderful things. And there are moments, you know, sometimes a lot of moments of that in there, but it can be really tough to start off. I feel like with a lot of newly married, especially new moms who are also sort of newly married, I kind of see that look in their eye when I see them that they're really struggling beneath the, oh, your baby's so beautiful, your family is wonderful. You have that, yeah, but this is so hard, but it's not something you're going to tell everyone who asks how you're doing, you know? It's, you know, it's supposed to be just all joy in having the baby. So, Janae, how was your spiritual life doing after you had Lucy and you had all of these things kind of hitting you guys, bam, bam, bam?
It really wasn't good. I mean, I wouldn't even say there was one, really. I mean, obviously, we're all spiritual creatures, and we can find time to pray at all points of the day. But, you know, I tried to take advice of friends that said, oh, pray while they're eating, or, you know, while you're doing the laundry, and, like, all of these helpful hints. But I was just exhausted and so overwhelmed and so many changes and so isolated. And so I just kind of, either slowly or quickly, however you want to look at it, just sort of, you know, slid by the wayside.
Yeah.
My time that I made for God was just less and less. And I felt, you know, not that He wasn't there, but I just felt a lot more distance from Him because it was so different. than before I had babies, where I had kind of my own, you know, I could kind of do whatever I wanted with my free time.
Mm-hmm. It's like there's a big learning curve, I guess, with maintaining your faith and like making yourself keep and being intentional about it after you have a baby, because so much of your time and energy goes into taking care of somebody now. I definitely had that too after I had my first. I wanted to ask you though, so I know part of your story is that you have suffered with some postpartum depression and some other things after you've had babies. Did you start feeling, did you have that after you had Lucy, or was that, did that start after you had your second baby, Olivia?
Well, looking back, I'm pretty sure I did have it with Lucy. I just don't think I realized it.
Yeah,
I
mean, it was sort of undiagnosed.
The first time too, is that you have an idea of what it's going to be like, but you don't really know. And then it just kind of becomes a new normal. So I think I
that's
did
so
have it
good.
After Lucy.
Yeah, that's so good to point out, Janae, that you think it's just normal, like it's just your new normal, and you don't think that, wait, maybe there is something wrong here. You just think it's something that maybe you're not being tough enough, or you're not praying enough or something. Do
right.
you feel like
yeah,
that was it?
I think that's what, So I was diagnosed after Olivia, but I think I did struggle with it with Lucy, but it was just, I had so many changes. We were by ourselves. We didn't have a lot of friends. It was, there's so many life changes happening that I kind of just attributed all that anxiety or sadness or whatever to that. Mm-hmm. Then like something chemically being wrong in my brain, if that makes any sense.
So what happened after Olivia that made you actually feel like you needed to go talk to a doctor or talk to somebody with the idea that you might have postpartum depression?
Gosh, it's amazing to me. She was 6 months old when I was diagnosed. I mean,
oh, wow.
So if I think about how long I lived with those kinds of symptoms, or just, I don't know, how long I lived with it, mm-hmm. it's just kind of amazing looking back that, like, I didn't notice something sooner. But I guess I just had a really particularly awful day where, you know, I started having the crazy thoughts that you kind of associate with postpartum mm-hmm. depression. And I wound up calling a very good friend and mentor and talking to her for a while. And she wouldn't let me off the phone until, like, I calmed down. And I had a friend come over to, like, be with the kid, with Lucy, or, yeah, with the kids, so that I could, like, kind of recover, I guess. And she mentioned to me in that conversation that I should probably start looking into it because it sounded a lot like, you know, postpartum depression. And honestly, before that, it had never occurred to me, really.
Really?
Because I had thought, like, my symptoms of postpartum depression, like, I was sad, but I was primarily just really anxious, and I had lots of, like, rage feelings, like anger. I was just mm-hmm. angry all the time. And I kind of just had attributed it to, like, what I had become after being a mom. Like, I thought that I was just an angry person that yelled all the time. Like, I honestly did until my friend, like, mentioned it. And I thought, well, you're right. That's kind of not normal.
Yeah. How did you feel whenever you did get that diagnosis?
Oh, my gosh. I was so relieved. So relieved. I mean, because you think, you know, you see all these things about yourself and you think, wow, I have fallen so far from, like, my spiritual life isn't great. And now I'm, like, on the opposite side, you know, making these bad choices and being such an angry person. And so you start to enter that vicious cycle of guilt and shame for not being as close to God as you feel like you should be, and then for acting the way that you're acting, and especially, like, having that rage, like, toward an infant and a two-year-old. I was like, this is, like, ridiculous. Like, how could they possibly, you know?
Yeah.
It's just, but then Chris was struggling too, so he didn't see it because it was winter in Cleveland, and both of us being from Louisiana, like, we don't do well in winter. It's depressing. It's tough. Like, you're stuck inside. It's gray clouds all the time in Cleveland in the winter, and so I think we were both at least a little bit depressed.
Yeah, and Janae.
But, yeah, I was just relieved. I was relieved to have the help that I needed, like, mm-hmm. to actually get on. There was hope. Like, it wasn't me. It wasn't me, like, being crazy in my head.
Yeah, that's so awesome. Did you feel like, okay, so another question that I had for you was that I know another part of your story is that you struggled with your weight because you were always super cute and petite and fit, and then you had kids and you, like most mothers out there, were like, oh, this isn't going away like I thought it would. So how did your weight or lack of weight loss, I think in your case, as we were talking about earlier, how did that reflect maybe your spiritual life, and how did that kind of play into the postpartum depression, and maybe even eventually when you you fell into running, fell in love with running?
Gosh, that's a hard question to answer. I guess, well, with Lucy, it kind of fell off faster, I suppose, and then we were eager to add to the family. So when she was only, I guess, 11 months old, we got pregnant with Olivia. So, you know, weight loss just wasn't on my radar at the time. I was like, well, I'm going to be pregnant again. Like, what's the point? And then with Olivia, she was born in August, so I guess winter hit, you know, when she was about 3 or 4 months old, when I would have, like, started, I guess, exercising or getting in some kind of routine. And the winter just brought me down, and I just had no motivation to do anything, you know, which is another sign of depression. It's just the total lack of motivation for anything. And so once I was diagnosed in March of 2014, which is 6 months old, that was actually managed really well with medication and counseling. But I still just noticed how unhappy I was. And it was, I guess, May of that year. And I just noticed I was still wearing the same clothes that I was wearing right after Olivia was born, which I was like, well, she's pretty old for me to still be doing that. And I just kind of was in this really bad pattern, like negative self-talk all the time. And just, I couldn't look in the mirror because I just felt so much guilt and so much shame that I couldn't get out of it, that I was really addicted, I guess, to sugar and processed foods and just sweets, particularly, I guess, or just snack foods or whatever.
I'm familiar. I feel like I'm always going to struggle with that too. So I think the big question for this interview is, what was your turning point? How did you go from everything we've just been talking about to training for a half marathon and then completing one this past January?
Gosh, ask God, man. He has a funny way of doing things that we never expected, really. I guess, yeah, it was May, and I was still realizing how unhappy I was. And so I tried diet first, I guess, and that was really successful. I did a pretty radical detox to, I guess, detox my body off of all the processed foods and the sugars and even caffeine, alcohol, like all of that, dairy. And I wound up kind of adapting sort of a paleo type, not extreme paleo, but like that kind of a diet for a while, which really, really helped me feel a lot better and drop a lot of the weight and, you know, break that addiction cycle where I couldn't say no to that, like, second, third, fourth cookie, you know, when I'm at a party mm-hmm. or whatever. And just that cycle of saying, well, I'm already so fat, it doesn't matter if I have this cookie or, like, and I told myself that, which is crazy to think those things, but I know I can't be the only one. I guess the program that I did suggested daily exercise. So I tried this ballet video for a while because I was like, whatever, but I still just didn't have any motivation.
Yeah.
It felt like a chore, something I had to do, not something I wanted to do. And Chris, you know, as you know, comes from a cross-country family. They all ran.
I know. They have, like, good athlete genes in their blood. I'm hoping my kids get all Franco genes.
Yeah, well, I never understood why anyone wanted to run for fun. It just did not seem at all like something I would ever want to do. I was like, seriously, you're running? Like, I could not imagine anything more boring or more pointless than that, which is so funny looking back. But so finally I just said, well, I have this Couch to 5K app on my phone. I was home visiting my family. My dad's really good about getting out every night for his exercise walk. And I was like, I just started going with him. And I thought, well, I'll start this training. Just, I'll do a 5K. That sounds like a good goal, right? Like, whatever. I had never exercised. To point it out, I may have looked fit before I had babies, but I was never, like, I never exercised really, like, more than once in a blue moon in my whole life. Like, it just came mm-hmm. easily to me. As long as I, like, watched what I ate, for the most part, I was okay. You know, so after, I just never had to work for it. And so after having babies, I actually had to work for it, which was kind of new and whatever realization. So I started the Couch to 5K app, and really, like, it was kind of love at my first mile. Like, when I first, my first mile, like, I was like, this is the greatest thing ever. And I just got addicted to, like, competing against the clock and competing against myself, really. Like, I'm never going to be an elite runner that wins marathons or anything, but I'm a very competitive person by nature, and as a mom, a stay-at-home mom, I don't get a lot of outlet for that. So it's been a really fun outlet for me to kind of race against myself. So, yeah.
And did it take you a while to get that first mile, like, of nonstop jogging in?
Yes, I think. I guess it was at least like a month of. I guess I don't know. I don't know where it lands in the Couch to 5K app, but.
But it took a few weeks of it, though.
Yes. So it seems ridiculous because at first they have you jog like 90 seconds or 60 seconds without stopping, which is like, you know, really hard when you're first running.
Yeah. I've done that app before too, or different apps for different distances. And it does seem kind of laughable in the beginning. And then, mm-hmm. you know, a couple weeks later, you're like, oh man, I think I need to go back a week or two.
Right. So, I mean, and another point that I mean, when I was overweight, I mean, the culture I feel like tells you accept who you are, you know, be comfortable in your own skin, that kind of thing, which I totally agree with. But in some ways, I feel like God did not create me to be the size that I was. Like, I had a lot of extra fat on me that didn't need to be there at that time. You know, like if I'm pregnant and you're, you know, whatever, then you have to have the weight and the baby and all mm-hmm. that. But I feel like God created me to be a certain body style, body type. Like, and I was using that as an excuse to just not do anything about it, to not manage my eating and to not manage any kind of exercise routine. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I have some curves now that I didn't before babies, but I'm actually doing something to stay healthier. And my mom has type 2 diabetes, and so that was another thing, was that I didn't want to be
mm-hmm.
that, you know, that woman that like gets to that age and realizes like I could have done something about it, you know, younger. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm not to speak negatively about anybody that has it, but I wanted to do something about it for myself and
sure.
for my kids.
So you got to that first mile and you said, wow, I think I'm kind of hooked. So did you just get the next, like the Couch to 10K app? And like, how did you get from the first mile to running a half marathon? That is no small feat. That is like, you called me a few times when you had just taken an ice bath because your muscles were screaming in pain after a 10-mile run. So how do you get from 1 mile to that? That's what I want to know. And I want to know how you did that spiritually too.
Well, I'll tell you this. So I ran the 5K in September. I signed up for another one. And so that was my first like race where I trained for it. And so that was a huge, I mean, I finished that race and I was like really hooked because I thought this is the greatest, you know, when everyone's running and cheering you on and all of that. So I finished the 5K and then I thought, well, I'd like to do some other distance. So they had a turkey trot on Thanksgiving morning and I had always thought it'd be fun to be that family that goes and like runs the race on Thanksgiving morning.
That's
of course,
cute.
I never thought I would actually do it, but I thought it'd be fun. So Chris and I signed up for it. It was 5 miles, so I thought, okay, that's a good, like a little more distance. And then I went to a retreat for a group I'm in and for side by side. And there's a lot of other leaders there, and we do book studies or Bible studies during the year. And they were talking about all these books that they had used in their groups. And one of the books was called Running by the Book by Corinne Bauer.
I'll put that in the show notes for everybody.
It's fantastic. It's basically a Bible study with either a 10K or a half marathon training plan. So it's got, I guess, 12 chapters, and it's 12 weeks of training for like either a 10K or a half marathon, depending on what you want to do. But it's based on like using that endurance running and paralleling it to how God talks about running the race of life, I guess, and the challenges that we can overcome.
That's awesome.
Or the challenges that we may face in life. And so they gave you like Bible study homework along with your like physical homework. And she also taught you kind of like what form should look like and how, you know, how you should be running, and she told you how much you should be running, and so that was really helpful. I couldn't have done it without. So when I saw that book at the retreat, I thought, I actually told someone at the retreat, I will never run a half marathon. I told someone. And that was like early October, and so the beginning of November, trying to keep the story short, the beginning of November, I was talking to Nick Franco, our wonderful brother-in-law, and he was saying that him and his girlfriend were going to run the half marathon, the Louisiana half marathon in Baton Rouge. And I just had this crazy idea that, hey, January would be a great time to go home and see family. And while I'm at it, I can run this half marathon.
Absolutely. And
honestly, it was just God put it on my heart. And I had this book. It's Bible study. I really wanted to do it really badly. And so I thought, I'm only like a week behind. I'll just start and I'll do the race. And so that's how it all kind of came to be. Chris laughs at me, definitely, because I had never, at this point, I still had never run more than 4 miles when I signed up.
Wow.
Yeah.
Not even,
but I've been told I had time, so.
So you signed up before you did that turkey trot that was 5 miles?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Look at you. Yeah. I think that's awesome. You're definitely kind of a go big or go home, all in kind of girl. And I love it. It really inspires me for sure. Truth be told,
it was God, definitely.
You actually inspired me because I needed some form of exercise, more for, I think, for mental health for me too last year, I'll be honest. And so I started jogging because I had heard Janae started jogging. And then you started doing all of these races. And then you were coming down for the Louisiana Marathon. And I said, you know what? I bet I could do the 10K. Which is a half of a half marathon, basically, right? Yeah, it's 6.2.
Right, although it was a quarter marathon, so it was like 6.5 or 6 or something?
Oh, yes, I forgot. Yeah, I ran longer than a 10K. Yes, no. I actually didn't know that until the end of the race, and I looked at one of the big signs that told you, you know, what mile marker you were on, and I ran it with my little sister, Rivers, and I said, Rivers, I thought we were supposed to be done by now. I just didn't put two and two together until then. But by the time you're at the end of a race like that, another mile or a quarter mile or whatever just doesn't really matter. You're like, I am going to finish this thing if it kills me. And I did. I did with Rivers's help. I think the one time that I slowed down and tried to walk, she ran up behind me and whacked me on my bottom like really hard. She's like, Aaron, you can do this. Get up, get going. So anyway, I love my sister. She's a great motivator. So, okay, you mentioned Chris, your husband. And one thing I did mean to ask you today was how all of your struggles affected your marriage and how since you've really had this wonderful transformation with so much grace and help from the Lord, how has that changed your marriage?
Well, exponentially, really. We were both, you know, really struggling in a lot of ways. I mean, with him, all the hours of residency just take its toll on his time to be able to put into residency and his family and into his prayer life. But so I guess we just kind of both were in this place when I was just unhealthy and anxious and depressed. Like, we just weren't in a good place. And I wasn't really relying on God because I had distanced myself for so long and I had just told myself, I felt so guilty and so shameful for that, that I think I just kind of told myself that it was too late, you know, and that he didn't love me anymore because how could he, you know, I had distanced myself from him. Not that I stopped completely like talking to him, or we went to mass every week and all of that. It was just, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was hard. So we were both kind of waiting for the other one to take the first step. And I think for me, taking that step in exercise really paralleled the struggles that I dealt with in the spiritual life of finding that time, making the time for that relationship and not having any excuses. And so as I got to be, you know, my relationship with God a lot better, I think I kind of started taking the steps that I needed to take in our household, and we just kind of began inspiring each other again.
And
so our marriage is definitely a lot better now than it was, you know, a year ago.
Absolutely.
Just for all of those reasons, I guess. Like, I'm just so much more happier, so much more balanced now that I have exercise and all of that. So,
and you've kept up with running too. You didn't just stop running after you ran the half. You've kept up with it. It's something that it's more like a lifestyle for you now.
So for about 6 weeks, I didn't run, maybe almost 2 months. So I just kind of started getting out of it. And then I had some friends kick me in the rear end and be like, not literally, but figuratively. And they said, you don't want to lose everything that you gained. So I got back into it and just realized how much I missed it and how I couldn't really imagine my life without running. So, yeah, I would definitely say it's going to be a life. I plan on it being a lifestyle thing. I hope Chris doesn't mind me sharing this, but after after it was obvious that I really loved running and I was going to be doing it long term, maybe not always actively racing, but just mm-hmm. always having it as a part of my life. You know, Chris always, he told me that he had always dreamed of having an active family, you know, one that could go outside and do outdoor, you know, sports together and yeah. all of those things. And he just kind of had given up that I would ever want that for our family because I just wasn't interested in being active, like, at all. You know, he did triathlons, and I never expressed any kind of interest in running or anything else that I could share with him. And so, you know, it was really special to me that when he told me that, that God had moved in my heart and done this, you know, entirely separate. He had never really prayed to God that he would have that. He just had kind of always wanted it. And so I think it was really special to me to hear that God had answered a prayer for him and for me, like, individually. But as a family, I really think yeah. that it's something we want to continue doing together. And when Chris has time, you know, as residency maybe slows down or after residency, I look forward to training with him to do races together in the future. And my girls, even one time I asked them what they wanted to be when they grew up, and Lucy, who's 3.5, said that she wanted to be a mommy and run fast like mommy.
Oh,
and I thought,
that is so yeah. beautiful. Janae, I feel like we're hearing a story about God. You didn't even know he was doing this, but he was making a new gift of you to your family and to your husband in a new way. I just think that's absolutely beautiful. And it's such a good example of God working all things together for our good and bringing new good that we couldn't have thought up ourselves mm-hmm. in our lives. That's so awesome. I did kind of want to close up by asking you to share your best advice for a young mother or a mother who just has young children, who is struggling with some of the same things that you went through with postpartum depression, with feeling self-conscious, feeling like motherhood isn't all that she thought it was going to be.
Well, I did try to minimize my advice, but I wound up kind of picking three categories. So I hope you don't mind if I share.
Not at all. Please. That's what this podcast is about.
Yeah. Well, it's hard because I feel like they're kind of separate. So regarding the postpartum depression, I think the biggest thing that I would say to anyone struggling is that if you suspect you aren't acting like yourself, even a little bit, and you're, even if your baby's 6 months old, like, I kind of thought I was past that, but you can still be struggling at that point. Even if your husband doesn't see it, because I feel like sometimes the ones that are closest to us just don't.
It's a new normal for them, too, and they don't even think right. that there's something wrong. Yeah.
Uh-huh. So I had a couple friends that really encouraged me to seek help, and that's what, you know, that's what I needed. So I guess I would say if you suspect anything, get evaluated. You don't have to do it all alone, and life does not have to be that hard, because it felt really
yeah.
hard.
And if you want to be evaluated, if you have a question like that, who should you talk to?
Well, I asked my OB to connect me with a counselor, like a psychologist.
Okay.
So I wound up going to speak to a psychologist about it. And she was the one who, you know, gave me the form to fill out. And when I got my score back, it was incredibly obvious that that's what I was dealing with.
Oh,
and
wow.
So just hearing her say, it's okay, you're not alone, and we'll help you through this, was huge for me.
Absolutely.
Especially not having Chris see it mm-hmm. and really doubt it. Like, he still was, like, not even totally on board that I would even go see the psychologist. Like, he just was like, I don't know that that's what you're dealing with, you know. But anyway, so that's my piece of advice for the depression.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just something that came to my heart to say with that is that I think that there are so many of us women who struggle with the idea that we are not enough, that if we just pray hard enough or have the right mindset that everything will be better, that we're just not doing enough in some way. And there is usually always something that we can do, especially in the prayer department, but when it comes to something like this, where there can be a very plausible suspect for crazy thing and these really tough things we're going through, always at least consider the possibility that there could be something else going wrong. There is, you know, even Jesus had someone help him carry his cross. And I think that's a really good image to help us remember the humility that we need to help carry our crosses sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely didn't fix everything right away, but just having the medication to help. I mean, I didn't realize how bad it was until the veil, it was like a veil was lifted. And
oh, wow.
I saw my life for mm-hmm. the first time as it should be. And it wasn't all perfect and it wasn't all rainbows and, you know, whatever you want to say, but it felt normal to me finally, as opposed to like clawing for, you know, drowning and just trying to like get above surface. Right. No, I agree. Totally. And as far as getting in shape or being overweight and struggling with that, two things. One was, we did a book this year in Side by Side called Me, Myself, and Lies by Jennifer Rothschild. And it's all about overcoming negative self-talk, like the self-talk that we tell ourselves. I mean, if we stop and listen to the things that we say to ourselves throughout the day, it's really kind of surprising how much of it is negative. Like, oh, I didn't do that right. Or, oh, that pudge, it just won't go away. Or, like, all this stuff where we're talking badly about ourselves and overcoming that by speaking truth to that negative self-talk and talking, you know, biblical truth, things that Jesus has said about us or God has said, how perfect and wonderfully made that we are. Like, if he heard us saying those things to ourselves in the mirror, which he does, I mean, obviously he hears everything, but if we think about it that way, or once I started thinking about it that way, it really helped to, like, stop that negative self-talk and really speak that biblical truth to those things and really, you know, realize that I could stop that cycle. But another thing, too, was setting goals. I thought, and just starting somewhere. Take that first step. You know, running a mile seems really overwhelming the first time you set foot on a pavement. Maybe you've never done it before. But you don't just go out and run a mile like most people don't. Some people can. But, you know, you have to take it one step at a time. And it's hard to believe that that's, you know, a year ago I was in a completely different place. But it's just one day at a time. Just take steps in the right direction.
Yeah, it's really... it's a great example of how our marriage, our life, our struggles, whatever we're going through, have as much potential to turn around, to bring good, or to become good as God has power. There is really just nothing that he cannot turn around for us. And sometimes I think we have to wait on it a lot longer than we really like or want to, but he is there. And I always think he either is everything he says he is and he can do everything he says he can do, or he isn't. There's no, you know, there's no room there for, well, maybe just he won't do that for me. You know, it's just trust. It's trust. Jesus, I trust in you every single day. I know I do that. I pray the Chaplet of Divine Mercy every single day. I have an alarm on my phone and I tell Jesus, Jesus, I trust in you. I know you can do this, and you will eventually, and I will wait in faith until such time as your timing says it's time. So, Janae, you have been an awesome interview today. I really think that your story and some of the tips and the books are really going to bless some people, and I really appreciate having you on.
Well, thank you for having me, definitely. My pleasure.
Thank you. All right, guys. Make sure you subscribe to The Right Heart by using the subscription box on the homepage of therightheartpodcast.com. Just enter your name and your email address, and I will send you a note every time I post a new episode. If you're listening today through iTunes, please consider leaving a review of The Right Heart, because every single review actually does make a difference. It really boosts The Right Heart in iTunes rankings, and that makes the podcast visible to more people. So if you have a couple of minutes, I would really appreciate you doing that for me, especially if this episode has blessed you in any way. All right, guys, I will see you next time, and peace be with you and yours. Thank you.